Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. With Amanda Howard and Robert McKnight.
Well, hello and welcome to a very special edition of Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. This week, it's a little bit different because we're celebrating our 100th episode and we're keen to look back at where we've been and where we're headed. Amanda Howard, the Serial Killer Whisperer, is with us. Hello, Amanda.
Hello, Robert. Again, it's always interesting to see how we start the intro, and I'm glad we're at 100. I didn't think sometimes we would actually get there.
Oh, I never doubted it for a second. You've got 25 years or seasons worth of episodes. We're always going to get to 100.
That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, look, Amanda, you reached out to everyone for their thoughts on the past 99 episodes. How did that go?
Well, it's been very interesting, actually, and it's been almost like a stroll down memory lane. So there were some interesting points that were actually brought up, as well as some requests for the future. There was a lot more than of those, though. It's like, oh, we've loved what you've done. It's all been fabulous, but this is what we want to see next.
Oh, okay. So where do we start?
Well, I thought we'd start at the beginning. I thought that that's the best way to start, and that is that we always have a news section. So there's only been a few episodes where we haven't had a news section, and that's purely been because we've had some chock-a-block episodes. So I thought we'd start with what people have to say about the news section.
Well, that's true. As I say in every episode, let's get into the news, and here's what people have to say. So we've got Missy, who says, I especially appreciate Rob's news updates in the beginning of every ep. Who wants to wade through all the bullshit about the Kardashians and Trump to try and find those serial killer updates that get lost amongst sports updates and celebrity gossips? I like that.
I like how it's Rob's news. I won't take offense to that. But I mean, it's great to know that actually people like that. You know, yeah. I think it's been amazing because there has been times it's like, are we bothering to do this? Is this something that people are interested in? And they are. So, you know, we do try to keep it to three stories. And sometimes it's hard to find three stories, don't you think?
No. I think most times it's hard not to keep it to three stories. There's sometimes way too much news going on. Yes, some weeks are slower than others, of course.
Yeah.
But it is always interesting. And it's funny, the news section I think is something – I don't know if any other true crime podcasts do a news section. And I have been back and forth on whether we should keep doing it because there is actually quite a bit of work in that. But – hearing that from Missy actually gives me the confidence that we should actually keep going with it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it's interesting sometimes. And it's often by doing the news section that I actually find killers that I have to add to my big serial killer database. So, you know, like I've put in Samuel Little who died. I've put that in. We've had a couple of been arrested, so I've put those in as well. So it's actually good for me to keep up with it because we're getting the database is now at almost 5,500. So I've put in about another 100 in the last couple of months.
Amazing. And what's also interesting about that is I will find different types of news stories to you.
Yes, it's interesting sometimes. It's like, oh, okay, I need to now go and Google this case because it's not one I know. So Robert always gives me a link. So if it's something that he found and I wasn't aware of, he keeps me on my toes and sometimes throws in a question. It's like, well, I don't know the answer to that. And so I have to quickly Google and see what's there to make sure that I am up to date.
Which you always are in the end. Hey, look, Rachel and Jane agreed with Missy saying the serial killer news at the beginning and they enjoy Amanda's take on it as well as Rob's. I think that's a key. Yes, you could call it Rob's news and I quite like that. We may brand it as that next,
I think so.
From next episode. But what I do like is that we get to bring your expertise in on what's happening, and there's always an angle to take. You know, like you look at the last episode where we ended up having a discussion about Rose West and her name change, and it becomes a little bit more than news sometimes when we actually start to give our views on the news. And so I think that takes it beyond just a hit of this is what's happening. There's always the insight that you especially give.
Yeah, and I think that that's an important part of what we do on the podcast, is that we aren't just reporting the news, because anyone can set up a Google alert and find the latest serial killer news, but we actually go a bit further and say, well, why has that happened, or how did it happen, or how is this different to another case, and how some sort of get thrown out. We have one serial killer that we've reported on a few times and his name escapes me, but he's been sitting in jail for like 12 years waiting for his trial, and it's things like that that we look at and it's like, well, why is this happening? Why is the criminal justice system sometimes broken and sometimes it's quite swift? And so I think we delve behind the curtain of what's actually going on.
Oh, look, absolutely. Look, the Toolbox Killers episode was one of our first really controversial episodes, and it divided listeners big time, because we played a brief piece of audio that actually had the torture of one of the victims. Some listeners were proud that we don't shy away, while others thought it went too far. You and I had that exact discussion off the air.
Yeah, and it sort of made me doubt a bit of what I thought that we should be doing, because I'm probably a bit jaded and I'm in a lot of gore groups and things like that, so I see a lot of murder and death every single day. And so to pick up one case and sort of say, guys, this is the reality of it, I think people didn't want that reality. It was too real when they realised this is a 15-year-old girl having her elbow smashed with a hammer. People just went, yeah, no, I like to read and hear about this, but that is taking me into it. And so I understood where people sat with that, but then others said, oh my god, we're so glad that you did that. It sort of gives it that reality. So it's sort of, you know, it's a very thin line that
well, this is the interesting point, I've got to say, because when you think about it, people they get into true crime, they listen to it, they read about it, but we are talking about some real horrors in the real world, and to hear that audio was horrible. Yep. But maybe it's something, if you really do want to be part of the true crime world, that you have to listen to. I don't have a firm view on this, I've got to say. But, I don't know. Maybe we need to understand the real horror and not turn it into just entertainment value.
Yeah, absolutely. And on my website on amandahoward.com.au, just throw that in, I actually do have some folders on there of the crime scene photos from some cases, including like Scott Peterson and things like that. And some people went, oh, fantastic, what's the link? And they jumped right in and had a look. And others said, no, that's too far. You need to hide it. It needs to have questions up saying, do you want to continue to look at what's about to be shown? So some people really, they don't want reality in their true crime, and I don't blame them. There's some things that I won't look at or won't see. As I said, I'm in a couple of gore groups, and there's things that they show that they say that there's a child warning or an animal warning, and I won't look at those ones because I find that I don't want to see a child being killed. But to watch someone, you know, get crushed by a machine or something, I'm all for that, because I think it's fascinating from a perspective of looking at the reality that someone can be alive and then they're dead. I have that fascination of when that moment happens, and I think that that's a lot of why I look at the more gruesome side of crimes. Interestingly enough, when I write about true crimes, I actually censor it, so because people don't want to read about the gore and the horror, so which is why I then write crime fiction as well, because I use all those heinous crimes that I'm aware of. I use those in my books because they're fictional and no one has to die for me to write about that, but it's based on what I know as fact.
Yeah, very interesting. And look, it's also interesting when we hold our Patreon group chats, what people want to see and what they don't. You have brought in some photos when we've done that. And we always say, is there anyone who doesn't want to look at these? And there isn't anyone who doesn't want to look at these photos, you know, as a general rule. So everybody's sort of a bit in for a penny, in for a pound. Mm-hmm. But the reaction we got to the Toolbox Killers did actually help shape the podcast. As I said, that was in the really early days. You can only get that through Patreon now in the back catalogue. So it did help shape how we took the podcast forward.
It did, that's for sure, because it told us where our line was, and we dipped our toes in the other side, but it was pretty much a don't go there again.
Mm. Now, we ended season one with a very special episode. It was called Unexpected Deaths, and Amanda, this was a very special episode. We spoke not only about the families left behind by murder and accident, but also suicide, and we recorded it around the first anniversary of your husband's death. What effect did that have for you and for others?
There was a massive resounding response to it, and I still get responses to this day. Now, that was recorded in 2018. He died on the 30th of June 2017. So it was on that first anniversary, as you said. And I don't remember much of recording that episode, and we'll get into us drinking during episodes soon, but I needed to anaesthetise to do that episode. It was really hard. I've had people ring me and just blurt out their story. I've had people write to me and say, that's just made me step away from the edge. I was about to go, and I decided to listen to this episode, and it showed me what the aftermath is. And so it was amazing that people have responded to it. I've had some hate as well, but not a lot, very, very few, maybe five or six, but I've had probably thousands of people respond to Steve's suicide. For those that don't know, yes, my husband took his own life, and I was the one who found him. And it was really traumatic. There was no warning signs that it was coming, and so it was really, really shocking. And Robert has sort of held me back from the edge a couple of times too. Robert, as most people will know, was the executive producer on Studio 10. We did a two-hour episode on the morning show about suicide and Steve's suicide. And so it was something that I do reach out to people about. I have people just say to me, I just want you to know I'm safe and thank you for talking about it. At the same time, it's Steve's story, not mine, but it's sort of linked together forever, and I'll be forever damaged by it. But knowing that other people out there have listened to that episode and it's given them a different perspective, that they are worthy, they are loved, and that mental health is a fatal disease like cancer. You know, people get cancer and we all rally around them and help them and respond to them, but people don't understand that mental health actually kills almost as many people as cancer does. There's 8 people a day in this country, in Australia, that actually die from suicide every single day. So, you know, they're epidemic proportions, and we need to make sure that we can address this and talk about it. And that's why we did. That's why we did the episode. Mm. We did talk about accidents and murders and things and how people are left behind by them. But it was an episode that was tough to do. As I said, I had a couple of wines for us to do it, but it was certainly something that I'm proud that we did. And I'm glad that people still actually reach out about it, you know, and I'm so glad to find so many people are now safe. And sometimes it might be safe for an hour, but, you know, an hour can change your life.
Absolutely. And I think we saw that. And it amazes me that people will actually have a go at you for doing that episode. I thought it was very brave. I thought it was amazing insight. And still to this day, I'm so proud of that episode, and I'm proud of you for doing that episode. Thank you. Look, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to change pace. We're going to look at some of the other episodes we've done and some of the behind-the-scenes stories of arguments, alcohol, and so much more. And don't forget, you can always get early access on Patreon. Yes, patreon.com/MWMconfessions is where you can get a whole load of bonus features just by helping us out by subscribing to our Patreon features through patreon.com/MWMconfessions. Our 100th episode will continue right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shocking celebrity secrets.
Justin Bieber's word against mine.
Backstage drama.
All of a sudden, Dolly Parton walks into the room.
And controversial opinions.
I'm not saying she's been approached. I'm saying this is what I'm hearing is the crunching options.
TV Black Box, the podcast where people who've worked in the TV industry spill their juiciest stories.
Julie used to like to drink on set.
TV Black Box, available in your favourite podcast feed.
Well, in season two, we did one of my favourite episodes, that of Ed Kemper, and I talk about this guy all the time. This is the case many people, including Aidan, one of our listeners, wants to see a full season on, a deep dive into his case. What do you think, Amanda?
I don't know. And, you know, I know that you want to do it too, Robert, and I just... I don't know. I don't know why I don't want to do it, because Kemper was one of those cases that I really followed strongly from the beginning. Like, a lot of people will sort of go towards Dahmer or Bundy or Gacy or any of those, but I actually sort of lean towards Kemper. But I don't know, there's so much about him, and I think with Mindhunter bringing him to the forefront and so many more people know about him, I think there's not much else to learn.
So it's pretty much been done to death is what you're saying.
I think it has. And, I mean, all of the other cases have been done too. It might be something that we do one time when I just want to enjoy myself, which is a horrible thing to say, but it's just a case that I think it will be easy to do. I don't know, Robert, what do you think?
Oh, look, I actually hear you, and, you know, I think if I know a lot about a case, a lot of people will too, and I do know a lot about Ed Kemper now, and I always use examples of him. That one and the Flavor Aid episode are the ones that really Jones. Have always stood out. And, I use that fact all the time that it wasn't Kool-Aid, it was Flavor Aid. Anytime someone says, I was drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm like, well, did you actually know it's Flavor Aid, not Kool-Aid? but, no, I do see the idea of not doing it. If we did do it, maybe it's a bonus on Patreon. But, yes, I do understand. There is a lot of Kemper out there, especially through Mindhunter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I think.
Now, look, season three also saw us do our first double episode, and that was on Jim Jones. Now, I really enjoyed those episodes, and apparently so did Janicki. She mentioned that it was her favourite as well.
Yeah, I think we got a great response to the Jim Jones episode, and, yeah, it's the first time that we sort of kept going on an episode that we realised that it could be cut in two. To have someone talking to his parishioners and tell them that, you know, this is revolutionary suicide, and, you know, we had that one woman who said, you know, surely there's other ways, surely we don't all have to die to actually prove a point. It's just so powerful, and, you know, after doing our episodes on suicide and things like that, this just shows how, you know, people will follow if they are told to follow, and it's just quite shocking how that actually occurred. And I loved that you were totally in. By season three, Robert, I had you. You're in true crime now.
It's true. Yeah, I really did enjoy that episode. It was one with the Flavor Aid. It was one of those ones that really stuck out to me because it was something that has become part of our culture. You know, people use the term don't drink the Flavor Aid. Now, I also love the fact that it's not Flavor Aid, that it's not Kool-Aid, it's Flavor Aid. Now, see, I say it the right way.
Yeah.
And just the idea that such an event has had that cultural impact, but also when we had the tapes of how it was going down, what was being said, even those... standing up and saying, as you said, there's another way. We got to hear the whole gamut there, and the wailing, and, you know, like the shockingness of it all. Mm-hmm. I think it was really, really powerful. Yeah, that episode really stuck out to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of, I think, the only cult that we've actually done so far. So there is more cults to come. David Koresh, I'm hoping, will actually be in this season. I haven't started it yet, but I'm hoping there's enough material for that. So David Koresh is the Waco Siege, you know, FBI.
I think there will be.
Yeah, so that'll be an interesting one to do. I do have a lot of, obviously not during the siege, but a lot of his sermons and everything before. I am fascinated by cults. As people know, I'm very anti-religion. I find religion fascinating. I don't believe that people can have blind faith, but they do, and they're willing to die for their leaders. They're willing to die for their cause, which good on them, that they're considered heroes in their own lives and their own stories. But for me, I just can't believe that people can follow. So I'm fascinated by cults. And, you know, we have Heaven's Gate to come, and we have a few others that, of course, I can't even think of right now. But, yeah, it's just so interesting. And these people with faith and blind faith, it's just I just absolutely am fascinated. And for them to be able to become death cults and they actually die for their cause, just it just fascinates me.
Now, look, when we did the Link Cafe siege in Sydney, we got a bit of heat over that one.
Oh, yes, we did. People thought that we were too happy reporting on it. So I didn't think it.
What does that mean? Are they saying that we were happy that this thing happened?
No, people just thought that we shouldn't joke. Now, some people like that we have this rapport, that we can chat and discuss things and break down when we're talking about something that affects us or something that doesn't affect us. You know, but this was like a life or death situation, and we lived this. You know, I watched it live on TV. You're at Channel 10 watching it live. You were reporting on it live.
We were putting live programming to air. So, you know, I do have some investment in this event. I used to work at Channel 7, which was just across the, not even across the road from the Link Cafe, across the mall, walkway, basically. So, you know, like, I don't know. Look, the thing is, we tackle deep, dark, serious stuff on this podcast. But if we went in with a, we can only speak like this, it would, you seriously would come out so depressed at the end of it. You know, we do have a natural rapport. We do have dark humor. We will make jokes at times about the stupidest things. But if you don't like that, this isn't the podcast for you. You know, I think a lot of people like the way we handle these things because we take into account the realness, the seriousness of the situation. But if there's a funny moment, it's macabre humor. And it's like Ricky Gervais on his podcast tells a story how he knew of some doctors who sent a new nurse in to check on a patient. And the nurse goes in, checks everything, comes back out. The doctors walk back in and say, hey, the patient's dead. What did you do? The nurse is freaking out and they say, no, he was already dead before we sent you in, you know. And that is the kind of macabre humour doctors have. Mm-hmm. Now, would they ever do that in front of their patients? Absolutely not. But it is, I mean, one, there's a lesson in there, check everything, like vital signs. But, you know, the fact is people find humour in the weirdest places, and that's just what happens. And as I say, if you don't like that, this isn't the podcast for you. We are lucky enough that people get us and get where we're coming from. I think we actually added some really good insight into the Link Cafe siege. We certainly both had things to bring to it. You know, usually you're the expert, but this was one that I had lived through. I was up, you know, putting live news to air, putting people into that environment, making decisions live as that was happening. So we both had really good insight. And if you can't see past a joke or two in there somewhere, there, I can't even remember what we joked about, but I'm not going to live my life where it's just constant depression. You know, like, crap happens in life. You got to look for some funny in things, and especially when we're dealing with this topic. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, and I think being Aussies too, Aussies have a darker sense of humour just to begin with. And so people learn our humour quite quickly because we are both dark. So I think and we can be quite evil with our jokes. I mean, I've done suicide jokes.
But that doesn't mean we don't have empathy for the victims or the people that lost their lives there. We absolutely do. In fact, I don't think we could survive or get through an episode like that if we didn't try to find some light in the incredible darkness.
Yeah, and there's sometimes that there's stuff that we've had to cut out because we go off on some weird tangent that we find hilarious and we realise that no one else is going to get it. So
That's certainly true. Hey, season four was a tough one with some incredibly hot topics. We had the Anita Cobby episode was one that sat hard with a lot of our Aussie listeners. This is interesting.
It is, and people have actually sort of said, you know, of all the episodes, and you know, this is number 100, that's the one that sat with them because we actually went through her last hours, and we almost did it blow by blow. Now, we often don't do that. We often do just the confessions afterwards, and so it's in hindsight, whereas that one was a bit of a foresight case because we actually went through, you know, they were stopped at the petrol station, you know, that they raped her, that they beat her, you know, there's all the different pieces of torture pulling her through the barbed wire fence and everything. And there was, again, that reality that a lot of our other cases don't have because we're talking to one person and trying to get their answers. Whereas that case, we actually quite delve deeply into what she went through rather than what the killers went through. And I think that's where it sits with a lot of people, because a lot of Australians especially, that's our yardstick case. So every case that's happened since Anita Cobby's murder has been measured up against that one. You know, is it as brutal as that? And so people know the case, and people who don't know the case and have interest in true crime often find it quite quickly because it is that momentous case that basically changed our lives. You know, Australia lost their innocence with this case.
Yeah, look, and it's interesting that one thing I'm learning, and as I go through this more, is that people like hearing about true crime unless it's in their own backyard sometimes. And yeah, we saw this recently. There's a film being made about Martin Bright. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of Australians have watched movies about serial killers on Netflix and Stan and wherever else, and it's not an issue. But as soon as they start to make one about an Australian atrocity, that's when it's too far. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's quite interesting where people, and not specifically fans of this podcast, let me just say, I'm talking about mainstream people. I find it interesting where they draw the line.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we have some friends of the podcast that are from Tasmania, and they said Tasmanians are different to the rest of Australians, and that this is a case that they really don't want to have discussed. I mean, I've been to Port Arthur, and those that have seen it, I've actually put up a video onto our YouTube channel of me walking around the Broad Arrow Cafe as it now stands. And it's actually hidden. If you don't know where it is in Port Arthur, you won't find it because they're trying to hide all of that history. And it's quite amazing that, yeah, we have these cases, and Port Arthur is exactly the same as the Anita Cobby case. It's our yardstick of our most heinous crimes. And, you know, mass murders before and since are all measured against what Martin Bryant did. And of course, then we can go into the conspiracy theories, which I promise I won't. But there's all of those things involved too that sort of tarnishes our history. And if we don't talk about it, and, you know, yes, people don't like movies and things like that, but I think it's important to actually have as a reminder, as brutal as they can be, that these things happen. This is reality. And what have we learned from it, and how can we move forward?
Absolutely. And look, Martin Bryant was such a significant case in this country. It changed Australia's gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a whole gun buyback system that is talked about in the world, you know, around the world. It's talked about in America, of an example of how it can work with proper gun control. We now have that in Australia because of that very case. Look, let's move on. And we also covered the Mark Dutroux case. Now, this was a case that really hurt you, Amanda, and when you researched it for your book, Child Killers.
Yeah, this is that case, and I will always come back to this case. This is my worst case. So everyone has that case that sort of haunts them, and Mark Dutroux is the case that haunts me, not purely because of what we actually reported on the podcast, because we actually sort of focus quite closely in on his localized cases, but this case actually goes into a lot of child sex trafficking, a lot of tortures, a lot of victims that come forward after his arrest with different stories and demands that the Belgium Constabulary actually takes over and investigates everything that was happening. And it didn't happen, and it became almost to a place that it was actually going to pull down the entire establishment, because there's all these cases going on, and the people involved were like judges and royalty and police officers, and all these people were involved, and it was sort of brushed away, and everyone knows the truth. And this is actually how I found WikiLeaks when I was writing about this case 100,000 years ago, because WikiLeaks actually had the entire case file, and it was in Belgian, unfortunately, and so I had to have it translated. But what happened to a lot of these victims, and it's called the X dossiers, that those that want to go and look it up, it's out there and available, what some of these victims went through and what they saw of other victims being murdered and how they were murdered, it's just it's brutality beyond anything I could even imagine. And as you can imagine, I can go quite dark, but this is beyond that. There was things I saw and photos of some of the victims that will haunt me for the rest of my days.
Wow. All right, well, let's move on, because we also did an almost live episode with the footage of the Christchurch shooter. We recorded it only a few hours after it occurred.
Yeah, that was a tough one. And, you know, there was so much that I've learnt since then, you know, about 88 and Heil Hitler and all of that. There was so many things that we didn't know when we did that recording that we learnt later. And let's face it, it was a brutal case. And even to this day, I mean, it's only been 12, 18 months, I can't remember, but it's a case that has now affected not only New Zealand but Australia as well, because the shooter was an Australian man. Yeah. So, you know, we consider New Zealand sort of like, you know, an extra state of Australia, that we just sort of love our New Zealand cousins. But this sort of made them look at us differently, and most of us felt shame that an Australian would go into these Muslim mosques and do what they did, and just, and the fact that he live streamed it, you know, it's just, this is our next sort of criminal. And, you know, our mass murders are coming up, and we are considering this a terrorist attack. And so it makes us look at them differently, because we all have this persona of what a terrorist looks like. And when they look like us, we don't like it. And that was just a case that, you know, I would love to do a deep dive on. This is an interesting one.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one from the point of view that the New Zealand government tried to censor any mention or any use of the material. And we did the clip. We put clips from the earlier part where he's driving around and the music he's listening to and the things he's saying, because that was relevant, you know. And it was interesting. We were actually asked by our podcast hosting provider to take the episode down a day or two later, and they were citing the fact that the New Zealand government had outlawed it. Now, the thing about that is that New Zealand doesn't have jurisdiction over the rest of the world. It's obviously a political decision Jacinda Ardern has made, and that's fine and fair enough. But I don't like this idea that we can't talk about killers or people like that, because politicians have made this decision. They don't want to give them the publicity they so deserve. The fact is, this still happened. This is an event we're still going to talk about. And we should be able to talk about the lunacy of these people, because that's what it is. It's lunacy. And I would be happy for this guy to face the death penalty. I would be happy to see this guy in jail for the rest of his life in a single cell with one or three meals a day, whatever it is, you know, but to get no benefits. That does not mean we should not look at how did this man become what he became.
Absolutely.
And the moment we do that, we put our blinkers on to what's out there in society. We stop focusing on how we can be proactive and see the signs. You know, there's a whole, we've just seen in the United States, normal everyday people storm the heart of democracy in America. Now, yes, it's Trumpism. Yes, they were incited by the president of the United States. But what leads people to think that this is okay? What leads people to think that it's okay to storm a government building, to go in to the speaker's chamber, steal a laptop, urinate on the floor? How do people flick that switch? The moment we stop talking about any of this is the moment we will allow this to continue and thrive. We should not be ignoring the Christchurch serial killer. We should absolutely be learning about this guy, how he got there, and how we can stop it from happening again. I hate censorship in all its forms.
Yeah, absolutely. That's well said. I have nothing to add to that.
And that is the end of my TED Talk. All right. We then get to season five. And, Amanda, this one divided listeners. We did an entire season on just Manson. You did?
Some people loved it. I cannot believe we have a lot of love for the Manson season. A lot of love. And others go, yeah, I didn't even listen to it. One episode was enough. I wasn't going any further. I loved it. I found it fascinating. I would have done 10 episodes. You know, I would have just...
But why? Why is this? Let me go through some of the listener thoughts. Tiffany said, I'm a big fan of Manson, yeah, dog. Nikki said, I loved every season except Manson. And Danielle said she skipped a season too. Why is that? Is it because it feels like a commitment? Is it because they feel like they know Manson? I actually don't understand it because there was so much good info in there.
Yeah, I think it's probably the same reason I loathe now to think of doing a Kemper season. I think because there is so much. And Manson is just in a category on his own and you can't put him in any other case. Yes, people go, oh, he didn't kill anyone. Well, yeah, he did. And that's a whole nother issue that we did address in
the season. Listen to the season, people.
Yeah. but I wanted to experiment and I thought that was a good person to do it on because there was a lot of material that wasn't going to overlap. You know, there is people that do a lot of interviews, even the interviews Yo and I do, we know that there's regurgitated information because everyone asks you the same questions. But Manson never gave the same question, same answer. Mm. He was always diving around and to see how this man's thought process jumped from this to that and his physical prowess compared to his actual stature. And you know, people watch Mindhunter after listening to our podcast on him and saw things that we had actually talked about, his nuances, that, you know, he's just one of a kind. And, you know, you can put him into a group with, say, Jim Jones and David Koresh as a sort of, you know, cult leader. But then again, he goes under the mass murder, and then again, he goes under a spree killer. And so there's all of these different areas that Manson sort of comes under, and he's just a one of a kind. And I think that's why people have a fascination with him. You know, one of the first books most of us read as true crime fans is Helter Skelter. I couldn't get through it, but I did. But it's an interesting case because it is so different. And, you know, that's why people loved it, because it wasn't doing the same thing as we'd done before. This is a different person. This has a different outcome, and it's just so out there.
Mm. But you almost made a huge admission in that series. What do you want to share? What happened?
I almost forgot Krenwinkel. So as we know, every episode sort of focused on one person, and we were almost at the end and someone goes, oh, how about Patricia Krenwinkel? And I went, oh, yeah, well, she sort of does the last bit. I think it was more fatigue because I had written that all so close together. Mm. And I almost completely missed her. But she actually was like the thread that went through it all, because she appeared in so many episodes, but we didn't give her own episode. And when I went back through it all, thinking, oh, my God, where is she? I realized that she was sort of one of those people that sort of took the case along, and she was basically the storyteller of what was going on. So that's the reason I sort of missed her on her own episode, because she sort of filtered through everything just like Manson did.
Mm. Well, look, season 6 began with the Green River Killer, Gary Ridgway, and you were disappointed with that one.
Oh, my God. So I was looking forward to doing Ridgway because I remember his arrest and I remember the trial and all of that, and when he was the Green River Killer and we had no name for him, and Bundy had done a big profile on him, and, you know, that was the way we were going to catch him. And to find out he's dumb. It was dumb luck. It was dumb luck. I'm just like, really, this guy can't string a sentence together. This guy has no sort of multimedia motives for what he was doing. You know, Bundy saw him as an equal. I would love to have seen what Bundy thought when they actually got Gary Ridgway, because he was the antithesis of the suave, sophisticated Bundy. We had this deadbeat guy who just dumb luck. I was so disappointed, but it was interesting because what I'd gone in expecting and what I actually got was quite different. And so this is what people need to know, is that when we do the notes for these episodes, I don't go over them 1,500 times. I do them once live, so I know what happened, as everyone else learns in the podcast, because I don't want to sort of, you know, polish it and make it perfect. I want it to be that we made mistakes last episode.
No, we like to have authentic reactions and an authentic conversation.
Exactly. Like in the last episode, we talked about the rights being given, and, you know, I gave an answer that I believed was true, but when I reheard it, I realised that I was actually wrong, and that can happen. But we do get our details right as best as we can. But, yeah, Ridgway just, yeah, that was a different for me. It was just so upsetting.
Hmm. But look, another episode we've received great feedback on was the last meal requests and executions. And that seems to have remained a listener favourite.
Yes, and it was just one, as I said, I like to mix it up a bit. And I know that you do too, Robert, because we can become formulaic if we allow ourselves to be so. So that's why, you know, I have 25 seasons scripted out, you know, with notes. But then, like, this season has ended up being different. Last season was very different. Next season, you know, I'm planning it to be explosive violence cases. So, you know, looking at crews and people like that, mass murders and stuff. But then when I get there, I realise by bundling them all in together, it can get monotonous because it's, you know, A plus B equals C. So this is why I love doing these opposite episodes that we do, like the last meal request and executions. That one was meant to be an excuse for me to eat KFC. That's where that one started because Gacy's last meal was KFC and I thought, let's do this one on camera. I'm eating KFC, basically. That's where that started. But where it ended up was very different because then we went through two real executions. And, again, that was a reality that people didn't realise that's how it goes. And especially the one that was botched and the way that it was then reported afterwards is it went perfectly fine. It's interesting to see that insight to what happens when someone is executed.
Mm. Well, look, we ended season six with a three-parter on Elizabeth Wetlaufer, an angel of death. Now, this was fascinating, this series. It went through her entire written confessions and it was very thorough and gave us ample material.
Yeah, I loved that one, I must admit. She was, like when we think of a serial killer, we think of, you know, this scary, ugly man, you know, people, I will say Ramirez, but some people think he's handsome, but that's a whole nother issue. you know, they expect this, you know, guy with a scar and a limp and, you know, with a hook for a hand kind of thing. And then we look at Elizabeth Wetlaufer and she's this plump, middle-aged woman who you would like let her babysit your children. However, she would probably be a good babysitter because she vowed never to harm children. That's why she ended up confessing, was because she was being sent to a pediatric ward and she couldn't trust herself. But yes, this is to show that, you know, they aren't male, white males between the age of 25 and 32. You know, it's none of that. This was a middle-aged woman with a medical degree who was killing old people because she didn't like them. You know, it's just so different to our sexual predators. And it was just so fascinating and a breath of fresh air to look at that different sort of serial killer, to stop everyone believing of this umbrella term of serial killer. They're all different.
Yeah, indeed. And look, then we did something different last Christmas. We did a mini summer season with a couple of older cases. Amanda, do you have any more plans for more of those older case mini episodes?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, Robert, and you made this premise from the very beginning that we want our episodes to be just under the hour mark, you know, and with a news section and a break in between and all of this sort of stuff. But then we have these cases that we don't have enough to do a full episode on, but I don't want them to disappear. And a lot of Australian cases, we have a lot of older cases that we don't have the material to do a recorded confession, or we have a written confession. And so there's enough to maybe do a 15, 20 minute sort of half episode. So I have lots of those for us to sort of intertwine in the podcast moving forward or on the TV show or whatever we end up doing, just to sort of bring in those different cases that don't follow the formula that we have. These are cases that we might sort of do more of a case file on it rather than doing a confession file on it. So, you know, but I have lots of them, lots and lots and lots of them.
Yeah. Well, look, our opening episode of season seven changed people. Listeners like Kel and Alana agreed that David Parker Ray and that tape we played got deep inside them. Amanda, this is one of only three cases that have given you nightmares. So I can imagine how our listeners felt.
Yeah, that was one that I left in your hands because, if I get nightmares from it, I understand how heinous it would be to those listening to it. But people, again, were fascinated by the reality and that we didn't back down from it. And this is why I often get your advice, because you're coming at this from a very different place. And, you know, you now have almost 3 years experience in this, whereas others like me, I've been doing this since I was 15. So there's hardly anything I haven't heard now. But when I heard that for the first time, that changed me inside. And that night I had one of the worst nightmares of my life. I've had very few in my lifetime, but that one. And everyone goes, when he brings in his dog, that's all you have to say. And everyone goes, yep, yep. So people, we actually put a timestamp in that one, saying to forward to a certain point. So people who didn't want to listen to it, we don't do that often, but that was one that, we needed to do. Well, what do you think?
Well, I think we gave the listeners the choice. By putting the timestamp in, they had the choice, which is why we did that. They had the choice of what they listened to, and that's power. It's not censorship. It's power to the listener. Yeah. So they get to decide. And what comes back to what I was saying before.
Yeah, and what did you think about hearing it about the dog?
I think it was important to hear it.
Yeah.
It's like the toolbox killers. As hard as it was hearing that audio, the realities of what these people do, I think, sometimes get lost in a void of entertainment. Even this podcast, you know, we're not sensationalizing what they do, but we're talking about what they do. They become known names. You know, we have a whole series devoted to the atrocities out there in humanity. And we're not the only ones. Mm-hmm. True crime is one of the biggest things on the planet. So I think sometimes it is important to ground ourselves in the reality of it. Doesn't mean we can't still enjoy it. Doesn't mean, it's not an evil thing to be drawn to true crime, even to find it entertaining at times, because it is, and this is how we cope with things, you know. So you're not a bad person for listening to true crime.
Yeah.
Just occasionally, though, I think it's really good to ground ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, and just show that, yeah, that this isn't pulp fiction, that this is true life and reality.
Yeah, this isn't a movie.
Yeah.
All right. We then met our first batch of frustrating detectives when we looked at the officers who interviewed Todd Colehep. Dear Jesus, Amanda.
Yes, no, stop talking. Don't tell me what's happening. I have to write. Then you went to the door.
That was a two-parter, but could have been one if the officers did a better interview style. And I really did. And you were shocked at how cohesive I made that, because I started cutting out. By the second part, I was cutting out all the officers saying, he went down to I'm not done. Shop.
So you say, I want to talk over because it's so frustrating. Because we had a killer there that wanted to talk. We had a killer.
He wanted to talk.
You know, just let me talk. You know, put three recorders down on the table, people. You know, make sure that all of them work. Put your camera in the corner. You have it on camera anyway. Like, guys, you know, yeah, it's so frustrating. And yeah, I don't know if some do it to try and incite anger and to have them accidentally blurt something out, but we've never seen that happen. But my God, when I was flicking through for some of the notes for this one, I went, oh, now who was the bad detective? And I instantly went, oh, that's right, it was Colehep, because Colehep just wanted to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk.
And some actually also commented on the Gypsy Rose episode in season 9 as having the same issues.
Well, they did, because, you know, we had the person, the female officer interviewing Gotojohn, so Nick Gotojohn, and she just let him talk and talk and talk and talk. Whereas the guy that was interviewing Gypsy Rose was saying, oh, honey, now let's talk about this. And, oh, you know, the pencil and the snowflakes and the snowball rolling down the hill and over and over and over. He said, you know, this is why pencils have rubbers and all of this sort of stuff over and over and over again. To the point that it's like we're not getting anywhere because you're not following what she's saying. And she literally says at one point, can I talk?
Yeah. And then these detectives who every time the person is on the edge, ready to deliver the sermon of how they did it, where they did it, why they did it. Oh, I think you need a break now. Oh, yeah. I'll go and have a break. Think about, oh, I'm not going to tell them that. Why was I doing that? You know, like, The idiocy. But you know what? We did also find a hero detective, and we've got to go back to season 8 when we did a mini-series on Jodi Arias. Now, that has to be one of the most popular cases we've done.
Everyone talks about the Jodi Arias case, and that wasn't meant to be a little season, so it ended up being 5 episodes long. That was purely because we let things go and we let things play out, and this is what we need to do because – you know, just doing the Speed Freak case that we've just done, and we said that all we received was cuts. So then when I put it together for us, it's cut down even further. So being able to play almost in its entirety was just a magic thing to do, and that needed to happen because it twisted and turned in all different ways that were just so amazing that I didn't know was coming. And as I said before, we don't go over these and polish them. We let it play out. This is our natural reactions to what's happening. And, you know, people loved it. Jodi Arias, I mean, this is a woman who killed one person. I mean, we've done full cases on people that have killed 9 and 10 people, and we've put it in one episode. This is how different the Jodi Arias case was. And that detective,
she stood out. Stood out for a number of reasons, just her whole motivation, the way the case was handled, the interview was handled. It was... I still find that as one of the top cases we've done on this series.
Yeah, and I would do a deep dive. People have asked for us to now look at the court case on Jodi Arias, and I would do that because it changes again. And I think that there's a lot in the court case that we could actually do that sort of does more of the twists and turns and the confessions.
Court cases would be interesting if we've got the audio.
Okay, well, Menendez Brothers is coming. It was meant to be last season, but because I found... I think it was 9,000 hours of court footage that we can actually do that. So,
well, that would be fascinating. And the Menendez case is one I'm very interested in as well. And look, let's go back, and we can't forget the episode with David Mitchell, the kidnapper and rapist of Elizabeth Smart. They were pretty heavy with him.
Yeah, I mean, it was physical assault. We had the really tall FBI agent who's like poking at him saying, you know, and we know this and we know that you did that. And David Mitchell was saying, you know, I'm Jesus Christ and I'm, you know, I'm the Lord's son and, you know, look me up and that's my name on the inside of my Bible. And
that guy was the biggest pain in the ass.
Yeah, but he was another.
But then the officer was knew his Bible better.
Yes. Oh, that was amazing. Yeah, that officer said, yeah, but how about where the Bible says this? And because they were Mormon, you know, it was just amazing that it was so natural for him to sort of do this. And Mitchell had never had people question his faith before. Mm-hmm. So to have this officer, that worked purely because they were two officers that needed to be in that room with that person. This is when it happens and it's magic. You know, yes, it was violent and... it could have gone further, I think, if there weren't cameras, but it was interesting to see it play out because then we also had a live victim, and that's where things change, you know, and that's where Colehep could have been very different as well because Cara Brown had survived, but, yeah, that one didn't go well.
Well, then last season, which was season 9, we did another new segment, Emergency Calls, and that again has been a favourite amongst listeners.
I'm sorry, guys, I say that you've all got favourites, but you all do, and this is definitely the 911 calls, the emergency calls, I should call them, because they're not 911 anywhere in Australia, they're 000. In England, I think they're 999. So it's different everywhere. But, these are episodes that I did just again to mix it up a bit, and there is so much out there out it. And we actually have some listeners that were 000 call officers, and so it's interesting to get their feedback on it too, and it's interesting to be able to do things like that people sort of have first-hand knowledge of. In fact, we did William Tyrrell as one of those 000 calls in one of those episodes, and one of our listeners is friends with the woman who actually took that 000 call, so it was interesting to get their feedback as well, because, you know, we don't stand back and not make judgment. I mean, there are our opinions. You called a detective an idiot in one of them, and that freaked me out. I don't know if that actually made it to air, but it may have.
Yeah, it did. Why did that freak you out? It's not defamatory. Truth is a defence.
Well, an opinion isn't fact either, so there is all of that. But it was interesting to know that someone was going to listen to our responses to that who actually lived it. So, the emergency calls are always a favourite. And I can do 25 seasons just on those. So there will be definitely more of those.
I really like those. I'd like more of those, especially when you hear things unfold in real time. It's just absolutely fascinating. One other aspect that some listeners like about the podcast is the gotcha moments.
Oh, I love those. And there's so many tapes and recordings I listen to or watch that I think it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And then the officer goes, let's take a break. Let's take your photo. Would you like a coffee? You know, would you like to go to the bathroom? And there's gotcha moments that we miss. And there's gotcha moments that come that are totally ignored because, you know, things like in the emergency calls, we actually played the tape of the person impersonating the Zodiac killer. And he says something in that call, though it's not actually the Zodiac killer, but the people on the TV speak over the top of him because they want to talk about something else. And often this happens because some detectives and officers that interview these people have an agenda. And so when something comes out of the blue and it's not part of their agenda, they ignore it. Look at the 911 call of the woman ringing up about the two boys in the house and the stupid questions that were being asked, not listening to what's being said. And listening is something really important that some people miss out on because they have that agenda.
But when people do listen, it's a very good thing, like when the lady was ordering pizza and calling 911. And the dispatch person totally understood what she was saying and actually set about a course of action that made a huge difference. One of the other things that I liked, one of the other things I liked with the gotcha moments was an interview where they had the suspect in. They hadn't laid it out on the table that he was a suspect, but while he was being interviewed, they were pulling prints. They were, his tire marks were outside the house where the victim was. And, you know, then they started, it was one of those interviews where it just kept pushing. And then they're like, and here we have, that's your tire mark. This is your DNA.
Yeah.
And the guy just broke down and confessed.
Yeah. Oh, I can't remember like what one was, that was. But yes, I do remember that happening. So, I just love
it. It was a great gotcha moment. But, Amanda, other people love the way you think.
Yeah, so apparently I think differently to others, and I know I do. I am a sociopath, I'm sure.
I can vouch for that.
But, that's a gift and a curse. I mean, I'm completely socially awkward in face-to-face. I'm terrible. I mean, I can talk to a serial killer. I can't talk to a normal person. But, I do think differently, and I can actually put myself in the seat of that killer and their thought process. So that's a good thing and a bad thing. But it allows me to see things from a different place. So I don't step out of things. I step into things. So it's different to how some people think. To me, this is natural, but I've had so many people say, oh, my God, I don't know how you thought that that's what was happening, but that is what was happening. It's just something I do. And so I am one of those people who sees between the lines. You know, I have a letter from Ivan Milat where he confesses to killings. But if you were just to read it, I've actually had people read it and I say, have you seen the confession? And they don't see it. So it's about thinking the right way or the wrong way.
Now, look, talking about all that, being the serial killer whisperer and all, we haven't done many of the killers you've interviewed. We've done Milat and Bernie, but not many others. Why?
Well, they're coming. There's cases that have more information out there than what just I have. And to have the information I have without it being a recording, it can be quite hard to do. But we have had a discussion lately, and we do have a voiceover actor who is going to come in and read some of these for us in various accents and things. So there will be more of those coming into it with information that is nowhere else. It will only be in this podcast or this TV show or whatever we're going to call it. But they are coming. It's just often we get requests for cases, or I'll be looking on YouTube and find some other cases that I've put in there. As I said, I had 25 seasons worth, and I'm probably up to about 45 seasons now. But I keep swapping and changing them around. Often the ones that I know so much about, I dump because I know too much about them and I would find them dull. I want ones that I'm going to be excited about, like Todd Kohlhepp and things like that.
Yes, but I want your knowledge, Amanda.
But they are definitely coming and I need to stop putting them aside. We were supposed to do Bobby Joe Long and then he was executed, and so I sort of held back a bit. But, you know, there is people like Bobby Joe Long, Kathleen Folbig, so I'm just going around the people in my room. Albert Fisher's coming, John Wayne Gacy's coming. No, we've done Gacy, I think. We've done Gacy. I've got the Zodiac sitting here. Yes, people, I'm looking around my room. Oh, we've got Charles Manson there too. But there is a lot that will be coming that I kept pulling them back and I don't know why. But now that we've sort of got someone that can sort of do these recordings off the written word, that's going to make a big difference to us.
Yes, that will make a big change. Shockingly, Amanda doesn't want my accents to be the one doing them. Before we go, because we are running out of time, Judge Rob, when's he coming back and what cases is he listening to?
Well, I've almost finished writing up the notes for JonBenet Ramsey case, so Robert will be coming into that case. Hopefully we don't get sued, because anyone who talks about that case does get sued, but we will try. But I've got Jaden Lesky coming, I've got Bible John coming, I've got Cindy James's murder coming, the Redhead Killers, Rochelle Childs, which was a local case here. There is so many more cold cases coming, but first of all, I'm doing a full season just on JonBenet Ramsey.
Fantastic. All right. Amanda, I can't tell you how fantastic it has been doing 100 episodes with you. We have been friends for a long time. We've had a lot of good moments. We've had a lot of screaming matches. You know, thank you so much for sharing this journey with me. You are the Serial Killer Whisperer. You have the insight. You have the knowledge. And I just thank you for allowing me to be part of this.
Well, I have to thank you, because you're the person who come up with this, Robert, and I'd still be sitting here just talking to myself otherwise. And I think that you bring a lot more to this podcast than you think. I know that you just think that you're sort of the news guy and, you know, Judge Rob is a fantastic part of it, but you challenge me. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it terrifies me, sometimes I wonder where you're going, and sometimes you tell me I'm wrong and I don't like that.
Yeah.
but I think it's important, because then you make me think differently again. So, you know, it can't be just one person's opinion. This is a group effort. And
well, that's what friends do. They challenge each other.
Exactly. And I don't think this would have worked if I did this with anyone else. It had to be you. And I've loved teaching you, and I've loved learning from you. So it's been great.
Ah, well, that's lovely. Hey, look, if you want more Monsters Who Murder bonus episodes, the full back catalogue on all the cases we've spoken about in this episode, just go to patreon.com/MWMconfessions. You will seriously find every episode there. You'll be able to listen to what we've spoken about and fully get across the Monsters Who Murder Serial Killer Confessions collection. Amanda, we're back to normal next week. We'll see you then.
See ya.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.